This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, July 9th, 2009. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, a difficult sex poem. The title of the program might leave you wondering what's difficult, the sex or the poem. The short answer is both, but for the long answer, you'll just have to stay tuned. Last month, C.D. Wright won the Griffin Poetry Prize, which is Canada's most lucrative poetry award. $50,000 Canadian go to one Canadian and one international poet writing in English. And C.D. Wright, originally from the Ozarks in Arkansas, won the international award. On this program, we're going to listen closely to one of her poems, and listening with us is Stephen Burt, a poet and critic who has written about C.D. Wright. He joins me by phone from Harvard, where he's a professor of English. Welcome back to the program, Steve.
Good to be here.
So, Steve, you've written about C.D. Wright several times, and we're not going to be able to go as deeply into her work on this program. In fact, we're just going to go into one single poem. But I wanted to ask you, how would you characterize her work for someone coming upon it for the first time?
C.D. Wright does three things beautifully that almost no other poet has been able to do at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The first is that she uses the unruliness of the American language. Its way of incorporating slang and regional words. Wright comes from the Ozarks and sometimes uses specifically Southern or Arkansas locutions.
Right.
She uses also the crackling, unpredictable unruliness that Americans think of as belonging to American English.
Okay, that's one thing. What's the second thing she does so well?
Another is that the poems are very often sexy. She is obsessed, almost at times, by the way in which poets and readers and people are bodies.
Mm.
It makes her a great poet of sex and sexuality, and more broadly, it makes her a wonderful poet of embodiment.
Mm-hmm.
And she is finally a poet of fragmentation. She is a poet whose phrases and lines and sentences often seem like pieces that you as a reader must put together yourself. She implies stories. She hints at stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that mastery of fragmentation is a third thing that Wright, for me, has been masterful at.
Mm-hmm. So let's listen to one of her poems that we recorded a few years ago, and I think it touches on two, if not three, of the things you just talked about. It's called Everything Good Between Men and Women, and here's how she introduced it.
It's about the unending tangle between men and women. It could be outside of marriage, but it's definitely a duet.
One quick note, the quince in the poem is a small tree. I had to look that up. And fire blight is a disease that afflicts it.
Yeah.
Here's C.D. Wright reading Everything Good Between Men and Women.
Everything good between men and women has been written in mud and butter and barbecue sauce. The walls and the floors used to be gorgeous. The socks off-white and a near match. The quince with fire blight, but we get 2 pints of jelly in the end. Long walks strengthen the back. You with a fever blister and myself with a sty. Eyes have we, and we are forever prey to each other's teeth. The torrents go over us. Thunder has not harmed anyone we know. The river coursing through us is dirty and deep. The left hand protects the rhythm. Watch your head. No fires should be unattended, especially when wind. Each receives a free Swiss Army knife. The first few tongues are clearly preparatory. The impression made by yours I carry to my grave. It is just so sad, so creepy, so beautiful. Bless it, we have so little time to learn so much. The river courses dirty and deep. Cover the lettuce, call it a night, O soul, flow on instead.
That was C.D. Wright reading Everything Good Between Men and Women. So basically, Steve, what's happening here is a man and a woman are making love, and he has a fever blister, we learn, and she has a sty in her eye. So I guess we can assume that they know each other and are very comfortable in their own skins with their own imperfections. What else does this poem tell us about these two?
Do we know that they're making love in the strict sense?
Well, yeah. You know why? Because I asked her, and you know that one line?
The left hand protects the rhythm.
It's one of the great pleasures of what I do is I can ask people naive questions about what that means. And here's what I asked her. Let me play that for you. The left hand protects the rhythm. Is that a piano metaphor?
I thought of it as an erotic metaphor. But I imagine I drew it from reading something about music.
She was nice enough to go along with my idea of what the metaphor was. But, you know, I think she was pretty clear they were having sex.
Well, the left hand protects the rhythm could be a description of what's going on right now as the man and the woman are getting it on in bed.
Right.
It could also be a description of what happens when they do, whenever they do. And it is also, and I think you're right about this, a description of how to play blues or stride piano, in which it's also literally true that the left hand protects the rhythm.
The quince with fire blight. But we get 2 pints of jelly in the end.
In the same way, the quince with fire blight. Now, they can't be harvesting and cooking the quince down for jam at the same time as they're in bed making love, right?
Right, obviously.
And they can't be receiving a free Swiss Army knife at the same time as they're making love.
Well, it's elliptical. It's not going right at it.
It is exactly elliptical. One of the things that's happening in this poem is that the man and woman who are living together are getting on in bed.
Mm-hmm.
And the poem delights in that experience. The poem revels in that experience. And the poem tells jokes about that experience.
Actually, tell me, what are the jokes?
What are the jokes?
Yeah.
Well, the left hand protects the rhythm is double entendre, as you said.
Yeah.
The first few tongues are clearly preparatory.
The first few tongues are clearly preparatory as a joke, in that, as if to say your cunnilingus will be better when you come back to it later.
Yeah, I guess you read into it more than I did.
I think there's a lot of sex in this poem, but I don't think that there's any more sex than there is food.
Everything good between men and women has been written in mud and butter and barbecue sauce.
And one of the pleasures of reading C.D. Wright's poetry is that her formal choices, with their intermingled fragments, their avoidance of complete unambiguous narrative, allow her to show how all of the different parts of our life that normally go into separate poems or separate photographs are in fact interconnected.
Mm.
How you eat with someone and what you think of their cooking are connected, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Connected causally or connected metaphorically or connected emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And both of these are connected to the weather.
The torrents go over us. Thunder has not harmed anyone we know.
This is a poem in which the couple who are delighted to experience the thunder and flood of orgasm, which seems to be coming, may also be worried about whether their vegetable garden gets damaged,
right.
And have reason, perhaps, to worry about the state of their house. This is a couple who haven't rehabbed their house. Their house looks old.
The walls and the floors used to be gorgeous.
That doesn't necessarily indicate poverty, but it could.
To me, that indicated that there's a long past between them. They've inhabited this house for a long time, and there's a lot that's gone on. And the walls and the floors used to be gorgeous. Then later, she says,
the river coursing through us is dirty and deep.
Yeah.
Which suggests, you know, sexual energy, but the fact and dirty suggests that it's a lot is churned up from the past. That's a very rich image that she repeats later in the poem. What else do you read into that image?
It certainly is. This is a river of sexual feeling that wants to go into flow, that wants an orgasm. It is a river that divides men and women. It is a river that separates the known from the unknown, and so there is a hint of mortality there. It is a river of adventure.
And obscenity, because you said dirty. There's no way, there's a couple of ways to read that word dirty.
Yes. dirty in that it's impure. It is perhaps a river of words, but it is certainly a river that is dirty in the sense of talking dirty, of talk dirty to me, of dirty magazines, and so on.
Yeah.
And it is deep. It is full of meanings. It is also a river that courses through us and along which we have gone. The torrents go over us. That is at once orgasmic or pre-orgasmic or erotic.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I think, the life course, because Tremble, the book from which this comes,
mm-hmm.
is not just about the momentary conjunctions between men and women, but about the lives that men and women can share and can remember sharing and can look forward to sharing. These are not people whose perfect conjunction comes from a first date, who have simply fallen into bed.
Right.
These are people who have learned to accept one another's physical imperfections.
Long walks strengthen the back. You with a fever blister and myself with a sty. Eyes have we, and we are forever prey to each other's teeth.
This relationship, even with its feverish sexuality and this house, have been shared by the poet and her beloved long enough for fruit to grow and be harvested and be made into jam. It is a house, and I think this is quite important to what Wright is doing when she writes poetry of her personal life. It is a house that is not only shared by one couple in one place, but a house that is open, as it were, to the identifications and the experiences of other couples. And the jokes that go into it, not just double entendres, not just sexual jokes, but jokes about pieces of American language that are in our head.
Watch your head. No fires should be unattended, especially when wind. Each receives a free Swiss Army knife.
Those are phrases that might come from Forest Service posters if you see them camping, phrases that might come from the back of a cereal box, bits of the shared public flat American language that we are familiar with are mixed in among these bits of more personal expression. And part of what that does for Wright, who is not trying to be sarcastic about them, who is not, as other poets are, trying to accuse our public language of being fake, part of what those quotations from popular culture and from the flat language of signs and commerce do for Wright is to say, I can get from flat public language to personal language. I can get from our shared American public experience to private erotic experience. Perhaps you can too. The fragmentation in her language is also an invitation in a way that's quite rare among poets whose works are that cut up. It is a way of saying, my experience is not mine alone.
Let's talk for a minute about the ending, which because listeners won't be able to see this, but it's heavily punctuated. There's lots of periods. It says, the river courses dirty and deep, period.
The river courses dirty and deep. Cover the lettuce. Call it a night. O soul, flow on instead.
And that last word really sticks out in a very surprising way.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder, instead of what? What is instead of what?
Well, as with everything in this poem, there's more than one answer.
Yeah.
One question you should always ask if you don't know why a word or a phrase is in a poem is, what would the poem do if you took it out?
Cover the lettuce. Call it a night. O soul, flow on.
That would have been really cliché.
It would have been, if not cliché, at least a lot less self-conscious.
Yeah.
To say flow on to one's own soul and to the river in one's life is to invite the continued sexual pleasure, perhaps, continued life together, certainly. What she does with instead is not to negate that invitation. The poem is still a celebration of a shared life, I think.
Mm.
But it tweaks it. It makes it a bit comic.
Mm.
It reminds us that when you say to the river in your life, flow on, you are saying so not because the river is always pleasant, but because the alternative would be worse, right? Flow on. Say to your soul, flow on, instead of saying to your soul, cut it out.
Yeah.
The way that line begins is also interestingly ambiguous, at least to me. Call it a night.
Yeah, very cash.
Says, first, let's go to bed.
Let's go to sleep.
We're done, right. We're done with sex. Let's go to sleep. Or we're done with whatever else we're doing. Drinking, playing music. It's time, perhaps, to stop gardening at night.
Cover the lettuce.
And if you want, you can see in that lettuce a suggestion of parts of women's anatomy that grow in.
Geez, really? I didn't think of that.
Well, it's not the only thing that it means, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Cover
this is a poem
lettuce.
That is boundlessly sexual.
Yeah.
At the same time as it insists and Wright insists so beautifully that you can't wall off the sexual from the rest of human life, and you can't reduce the rest of human life to the sexual either.
Hmm.
Once you start looking for sex, especially in the poems of Tremble, you can find it everywhere.
Hmm.
But if you look only for sex, then you're getting her work deeply wrong, I think.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you so much.
Stephen Burt's latest book is a book of essays called Close Calls with Nonsense, published by Grey Wolf. You can read many articles and reading guides by Stephen Burt on our website, poetryfoundation.org, where you can also read a generous sampling of poems by C.D. Wright. Her latest book is Rising, Falling, Hovering, published in paperback by Copper Canyon. And as always, do let us know what you think of the program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.